Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, this is Bruce Norris. Thank you for joining us. Today, our special guest is Paul Bertrand. He's a supervisory special FBI agent with the Los Angeles Mortgage Fraud Division, and he's a program coordinator. Paul, welcome to our show.
Hey, thank you very much.
When I think of fraud in real estate, I always think of a borrower lying on a loan application, but there's a lot more to it than that, isn't there?
Sure, quite a bit.
What scope do you cover in the world of fraud other than just somebody exaggerating on a loan application?
We like to focus on the larger, like, organized groups, people that actually devise a scheme and usually involve several individuals with different parts of it, mostly with the sole purpose of defrauding banks out of their money, although sometimes it defrauds individuals as well.
Okay. How do you determine what to prioritize as far as what you pursue? Is it the number of transactions or the dollars amount that are involved?
I would say both of those. We do have a system in place where we try to determine who the most egregious offenders are, either based on the sheer volume of transactions or if there's few, like, unusually large transactions, we'll go after those as well.
Okay. Since home prices have become more affordable, you would kind of think that mortgage fraud would be going down. Is that the case?
Well, it depends what you call in mortgage fraud, because the mortgage fraud, it's been evolving over the last, I would say, 2.5 or 3 years. So, like, traditional straw buyer type schemes with artificial appraisals and all that, those cases did decline. But since then, we've moved through several different types of mortgage fraud, and you know, every time one declines, another one is on the rise.
Okay, so the business changes as it either real estate inflating causes people to want to get in and exaggerate. When you're going down, what are the kind of things that crop up?
Well, I'll tell you, like, for instance, as home prices started tanking, you know, a couple of years ago, and banks stopped, you know, lending so much to people trying to buy homes, we saw rises in schemes like builder bailout schemes or home equity lines of credit schemes as people were getting the last, you know, equity that was available in their homes. And as even all that equity went away, we saw foreclosure rescue type schemes on the rise, involving, you know, say the filings of fictitious bankruptcies or the like, or fractionalized interest of properties being placed into bankruptcies. And then even as that went away, or was too complex, we saw quite a rapid rise in loan modification schemes. And now, as people seem to be catching on to loan modification schemes, we're seeing a rise in short sale schemes, and particularly those involving, like, real estate agents.
Okay. All right. We're going to kind of touch on some of those topics individually because they are very important. California, where do we rank in the nation as far as a problem for fraud?
Well, on sheer volume of fraud, we're number one by a lot. There are a couple of places in the country, for instance, Las Vegas, which has a higher percentage of fraud than we do. But since they're so much smaller, sheer numbers-wise, we dwarf them, you know, in sheer volume.
Okay. That doesn't surprise me, I guess. In that range of 2005 to 2007, stated income loans were very prevalent. How common was it for people to misstate their income in order to obtain a home loan?
Well, it was pretty prevalent. I don't know an exact percentage.
No, it'd be hard to know that.
But, I mean, they you know, they were called liar's loans for a reason. And that was because I do know of instances, for instance, where someone would not qualify for a full doc loan. Then they were approached to, hey, try a stated income loan. And then they may be told what their income would have to be in order to qualify for the loan. And that's what they would put on the loan apps.
It sounds sort of like a team effort in that type of a situation. If the FBI were to get involved with, you know, pursuing that, would they look at the person that borrowed the money as the bigger problem, or the person in charge of directing the whole show?
Well, let me try to answer that this way. Is the sheer volume of fraudulent loans we had out there is way too much for me to ever see a particular one, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But if we had, for instance, a particular loan broker who maybe had, you know, dozens of loans where the banks discovered false income or asset, you know, statements related to those loans.
Yes.
Then they start to connect those dots, and we'll see, okay, clearly this broker was in the business of, you know, manufacturing income and asset documentation to qualify borrowers for loans. And then we have to figure out from there, even if the borrowers were real or was it some kind of a straw situation, you know?
You know, you've used some insider words that maybe most people wouldn't think the FBI would know. So it kind of raises two questions. You're obviously getting information from somebody that really understands the business, or you've just been exposed to it so much that you really understand it just because you've been through it so many times. That's the first question, is how do you get all the insider information sort of on a timely basis? And the second one is, the people that commit fraud, do they think they're inventing something that you guys haven't seen before?
Well, the answer to your first question is, we get complaints most often from the banks who are the victims.
Okay.
You know, because they like to obviously get our help, you know, since they're losing money.
Mm-hmm.
And second is, for me personally, I just learned through, you know, through the job. And I think the Bureau does offer, you know, courses in mortgage fraud, and they send agents to different courses in mortgage fraud where we can learn, you know, sort of the insides of the real estate business. But then once you've done it for a while, the schemes do repeat. It's kind of relatively rare that I've seen a new mortgage fraud scheme come up that I haven't seen before, although sometimes there are different intricacies to it that may make it stand out from the rest.
When people get involved in it, though, are they pretty sure that they've invented something rather than realize that you've seen most of it?
I don't know the answer to that.
Okay. There's two types of fraud I've read about. It's called fraud for ownership, which was the stated income loans. And is it because the numbers are so overwhelming, or because of the intent of the borrower was different, that's really not pursued very often by the FBI?
Well, it's because if a person is committing fraud for ownership, chances are they want to live in the house and
right.
They're intending to pay for it. They just wouldn't have qualified for the loan otherwise.
Okay.
And so in the case, it's still a crime to do that, but it's not, the chances of default on those loans, for instance, are significantly less than in an organized scheme where they intended to fraud the bank right from the beginning.
Okay.
Now, with that said, I have to couch that, though, that through the 2005, 6, you know, even 7 time period, with people signing up for every kind of loan and even the option arms that are, you know, resetting, there's hundreds of thousands of people, obviously, that can't afford those loans they got into and are foreclosing now. So, but to answer your question, is we most, for the most part, focus on the fraud for profit folks, not the fraud for housing folks, just because we try to get the most egregious ones.
Okay. A national mortgage fraud team, NMFT. Who makes up that team, and what do they do?
Well, the National Mortgage Fraud Team is a unit back at our FBI headquarters. They're in the financial crime section. Mm-hmm. And that unit is made up of a unit chief who oversees the mortgage fraud program for the whole country, and then several supervisory special agents that work underneath them that are underneath that person, which are each responsible for a different area of the country. And what they do is provide, you know, policy and guidance and strategy, like, to the country as to what they're seeing and what we should be investigating. And as well, they collect information from us so that they have a comprehensive picture of what we're seeing out here.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the short sale that the FBI views as a fraudulent transaction. Can you explain to me the players and what is wrong with what's going on?
Okay. Essentially, all the fraud we're interested in amounts to the same thing. Somebody has to be lying to somebody for the purpose of profiting from it. And so there's nothing at all wrong with a legitimate short sale where an agent and a buyer, for instance, may make an offer on a house which is less than is owed on it, and the bank can either choose to accept it or not. Absolutely nothing wrong with that. What we're seeing a bit of a rise in now is a system where there's very low inventory available in some communities of houses listed for sale. And so we know of examples, for instance, where a listing agent is convincing his clients to attempt to negotiate a short sale with the bank without telling them that there are legitimate buyers lined up who are willing to pay more of a market rate for the house. And what we're seeing in this particular kind of fraud is the agent will approach the lender and negotiate a short sale for an investor who is somehow related to the agent, and at the same time then open a double escrow, or within a very short period of time flip the house over to a legitimate buyer who's willing to pay more of the market rate and keeping the difference, and splitting it up between whatever parties were involved.
Now, we're almost have a team going on again. What would, now I'm just going to run by some scenarios because this is a transaction that is going on a lot, and I know you guys must obviously know that. There are some short sale properties that come out in the MLS where the agent has negotiated what it would, in essence, be a wholesale price. The buyer simply makes an offer, no connection with that broker, buys the property, and is able to resell it for a profit. Is there a problem with that?
No, as long as there's not some lies or hidden, type of backroom dealing going on. If everything's fully disclosed, I wouldn't think there is a problem. The problem just comes in if there's buyers out there whose offers aren't being considered because there is other sort of related party transactions going on that are being hidden.
I think what would be typical, especially in where we live in Riverside, a short sale a property candidate would be something that the loan would far exceed the real value of the property today. So I'm just going to throw an example. A $400,000 loan currently on a $250,000 house, and the agent negotiates for the lender to list it at 190, and a disconnected buyer makes an offer and buys it at 190 and resells it for a profit. The lender doesn't know, perhaps, that that's the intent. Is that a problem?
In that case, it would depend there's two banks involved. One is the bank that's owed 400.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other would be the bank that the investor is borrowing from to purchase the house, if one is used.
Right. It's usually probably a cash offer, let's say.
again, it would just depend on the disclosure. If everything is fully disclosed, then no. I don't know if the first bank is being told that it was being purchased as a primary residence or that was there was going to be some kind of time of occupancy, then that might be a problem. But if it wasn't, if it was just an, you know, complete arm's length deal by an investor to purchase a house and sell it for more, I wouldn't think there's anything wrong with that.
Okay, that's we don't either, but we're really just trying to do the right thing, because there's a lot of times where the prices are very reasonable, and maybe for a good reason. Maybe the lender needs to unload a property, it fell out of escrow, or the condition is not so good, but it's becoming a more prevalent transaction, and people are just concerned, okay. And part of the problem is, as an investor, we might make an offer, and we have no idea what the lender was told by the listing agent. Not at all, because we've never talked to the listing agent.
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, that's a pretty arm's length transaction.
Right. And people will know if they're making deals that are being hidden or covered up. And I would say as long as they're not, then it shouldn't be a problem.
Okay. In either case, usually the owner is not going to get any less, because they're not going to get anything in any case, because they owe more than the house is worth. So it's really between the lender getting less and being hoodwinked into it. That's kind of what you're trying to avoid, and that makes sense.
Yep, and even that, though, would depend, and I don't know what the state of this is right now, but there was a day when sellers were getting tax bills for the difference between what they owed and what the short sale went through at, and I don't know if they still are or not.
I do believe that is not true now, for at least temporarily.
Okay.
So it does not. That would be a good point, that they would incur a bigger tax bill than necessary, but that is not true right now.
Okay.
Flipping schemes. How would you characterize the typical flipping scheme?
A typical flipping scheme?
Yeah.
Consists of essentially tricking a bank into funding a loan for the purchase of a property. Where usually a flipping scheme involves a straw buyer and an overappraisal at its simplest, where a property would be purchased and then, say, falsely appraised and then sold at the higher appraised value. And usually it's hard to get buyers at that higher appraised value. So typically there would be a straw buyer introduced with some, you know, basically an identity used to purchase the house, and then the bank would be defrauded, you know, out of the difference in the mortgage money that was paid to the seller, which is essentially controlled by the insiders in the scheme anyway.
Okay.
I don't know if that was clear or not.
Yeah, no, it was, but I just to clarify another point, when an investor buys a home that needs work, they put in the work, the appraisal would obviously be different than its former as-is condition. There is a price increase. They sell it and make a profit. Everybody okay with that?
Absolutely.
Okay. Just want to make sure. All right. One thing that does happen when you have lots of foreclosures is there's people that figure a way how to hurt those people, take money from them. So there's foreclosure rescue schemes going on. In what form do they show up as?
Well, foreclosure rescue schemes usually consist of a lie to the person whose home is already in distress in order to get money from them, and the homes ultimately foreclose anyway. And in its simplest form is a lot of the loan modification schemes we see today, where people will promise a loan modification, either a principal reduction or a low fixed rate or both, and they make lots of wild promises to desperate homeowners in exchange for a fee in advance, and as soon as the people pay the fee, nothing happens. That's the last they hear from them, and they still end up, you know, the house still ends up foreclosing and they get evicted.
Is there ever a time where a fee in advance with someone in foreclosure is allowed in California?
I don't believe so anymore.
Yeah.
There was a time when it was allowed, and I think California passed a law late last summer or early this fall that made it illegal for anyone to charge advance fees anymore.
That is correct, yeah. So it's now, I know it's you work in California, but I know California is probably among the more strict in that regards. But it's probably hard to get people in foreclosure any help since there's no advance fee. And if the solution doesn't work, you know, you could have a legitimate company really trying to do some good work. And if it didn't work, if the lender didn't cooperate, the odds of them getting paid would be kind of long. So unfortunately, the rules are usually made to protect the consumer to such an extent that they probably don't get a lot of help at this point.
Sure. I know consumers, basically, I do know of some consumers getting help just by contacting the lenders themselves.
Absolutely. The lender probably at this point is very open to that phone call, more so than ever. One of the frauds that probably come up, and this is very unusual, to get a loan modification, I would think you'd have to present the lender with some kind of hardship. So do you find people going the other way? You know, in the 2005 and 2007, everyone's exaggerating their income. To get a loan modification, do you find people are kind of dumbing down their assets or their income to try and get what they want?
Yes. it's funny that it would go the other way. But, I mean, Leah, like we said before, wherever people can make money, they will, you know, try to.
Mm-hmm. But that is starting to be one of the things that you have to pay attention to.
Yes, and we're actually starting to see people make false claims of identity theft as well, to say that, hey, I never purchased this house. I was used as a straw buyer.
And oh my!
To try to get out of a loan that they did get into themselves.
Okay, just between conversations with a couple of people, I heard that they were trying to dream up swapping short sale houses. So they were each going to negotiate a short sale and then each in turn buy each other's house and then deed it back later. So people
that would be a problem.
That would be. That's right. I read that in the LA Times one day and I actually gave him the article. I said, I don't think you should do that. I
think no, because again, and it kind of gets into that whole pre-planned conspiracy scheme kind of thing to defraud the banks, you know?
Yeah. What about just people that decide, I think maybe if I burn the house down, that would be a way out. Is that also on the rise?
I haven't. I'm not familiar with it.
Okay.
I haven't heard of the cases.
Okay. I'm glad to hear that. There's the word that I read fairly often in a couple of the reports that I read was perpetrator. That does not sound like a good thing to be known as. What happens to people that are found guilty of fraud? Or let's give me the process of the you're under arrest. Is that a pleasant process or is that very intimidating?
Well, it's pretty intimidating. I mean, basically what happens is we start with a complaint and we do a whole series of interviews of anybody who might have any knowledge, gather all the business records in question, and when we think we have enough of, you know, information to charge somebody with a crime, then we'll either indict them in front of a grand jury or write an affidavit to get a criminal complaint. And regardless of which of those two methods we use, we end up with an arrest warrant.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time someone's arrested by the FBI, they've already been charged with a crime.
And they know it's under investigation as well?
Most of the time, sure.
Okay.
Most of the time, people know they're being investigated for mortgage fraud before we get to the point of arrest, although it's not always the case.
Okay. Well, Paul, we're down to our last 20 seconds or so. Want to thank you for joining us. Does 2010 look like a busy year for the FBI and fraud?
Yes, it does. The last several years have all been busy years for fraud.
Okay. A website address that might be helpful to people finding out more?
They can try www.fbi.gov.
Okay. All right, Paul, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you very much.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.